You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 19 June. We've got the Bank of England rate decision, 1 p.m. today. Expected, no change. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Jimmy Moyaha. Going to touch on the Vukile Property Fund results. They were really strong and worth a look at. And the FOMC rate decision, no change. We're chatting with Prescient Investment Management. We're going to be talking inflation targeting. Is now a good time to get that target to 3%? And then Sylvester Kobo from Stanlib. Expectations for Rand and local bonds for the rest of 2025. I also want to touch on there being a flexible fund. What does that mean? Does it really make a difference in their life? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Signia launches regulated Bitcoin exposure fund that tracks the iShares Bitcoin Trust. Came into effect earlier in June. Business Day, government partially lifts ban on Brazilian chicken imports, move that excludes imports from Brazilian's bird flu ground zero state to ease food insecurity and potential price hikes. Morning markets, the US was mixed but hardly changed. The S&P was down 0.03%. The Nasdaq was up 0.01%. The East is mostly red. Sydney, the exception, up a tenth of a percent. Turkey is down 0.75%. Hong Kong, 1.9% down, 10 cent, 2.1% lower. Commodities mostly red. Gold futures 3,390. Brent 76.53. Platinum is green, 1,336. Palladium 1,064. The rand is 18.04. Bitcoin 105,000. And top 40 opening call, a little under 200 points to the red. That's about a quarter of a percent lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Jimmy Moyaha. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. Vukile results, they came out, first thing Tuesday morning. A good set of numbers from them. The little property stock that absolutely can. Of course, they've got Spain, they've got local. And I mean, the stock is up almost, fourfold in the last 5 years. And they were, I suppose, solid, good results.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Those numbers were actually quite impressive. You're absolutely right. I mean, we look at some of the standout figures there. Their property portfolio now north of 50 billion rand in assets there. The offshore portfolio bigger than their local portfolio. Mm-hmm. And they have, more importantly, as you mentioned, around that Spanish portfolio, they've gotten the offshore market right. We've seen far too often South African companies, listed companies, go into international markets, not do so well, have to close up other regions, have to move away, and have to reconsider. I mean, I'm thinking of the likes of Spar that went into Poland, had to exit there, some of the other property companies as well, going into other markets, not having the best time. But Vukile Property Fund has been very disciplined in how they've approached this from their perspective. And it's been showing in the results. I mean, the Spanish business, that Spanish sale was quite impressive as well. They're selling off one of their properties and netting a profit of £82 million, around 1.6 billion rand. So that is a testament to the structure that they've got and the management team and how it is that they're approaching the property market seems to be working out for them quite well. So Portugal seems to be next on the cards for them.
Yeah.
They started investing in Portugal this year, so hopefully that starts to see the same profitability and positivity that they saw in Spain and other markets. But I think from an overall perspective, those results were quite impressive.
Absolutely. And I mean, we'll see Portugal, but to your point, I mean, they really have sort of managed to get it right so far. So I think probably they can again. Let's move to the FOMC. Not unexpected. We did not get a change in the rates last night. If you look at the dot plot, there are some cuts due for the rest of the year. If you look at their targets, inflation and unemployment adjusted slightly higher from the May meeting, GDP slightly lower from the May meeting. But I don't think Powell necessarily said anything that was unexpected. In a sense, he really is saying, you know what, we're going to cut rates, but not right at this moment in time.
Yeah, the meeting was very unsurprising. The dot plot also, as you say, unsurprisingly. I think a lot of what the Fed is doing at the moment is exactly what President Trump doesn't want them to do, but forgetting that President Trump caused this, right? So we were set for rate cuts. Inflation is under control. The U.S. economy has been on the right track. But the moment you start to make an announcement saying we're doing sweeping tariffs across the board, we're having Liberation Day, we're jolting the markets, and everybody starts to get concerned, you can't expect that your own Fed will not be concerned as well around the potential impact of the decisions that you are making, especially if those decisions don't seem to be thought through. And so from a Fed chair perspective, or from a Fed perspective, they've taken a responsible approach to say, we're not going to be led by the noise the way you want things to happen. And this is something that we're seeing happening in markets as well. The rest of the global markets also saying, we're not going to be led anymore by the noise that comes out of the White House. We'll consider it, we'll look at it, but we might not let it drive us as much. And the Fed is sticking to their guns. They're sticking to the plan that they've got, and that plan is a plan that was put in place before President Trump was elected, and it's a plan that they will likely see through, regardless of whether President Trump removes Fed chair power or not. So I think we are we're seeing signs of a very stable Fed and a very rooted Fed in understanding that the dynamics of an economy and the dynamics of rates decisions go beyond whether or not a single individual wants us to cut rates at a specific time. And that's showing that the Fed is willing to lead in times of difficulty on their monetary policy, and they're willing to stand on that policy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a unanimous decision, but certainly we've got about half of those policymakers are looking for one or perhaps even two cuts later in the year, but of course, small cuts. We'll leave it there. Jimmy Mwaha, always appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Hannah de Dombregar, a prescient investment management quantitative analyst and economist. And I appreciate the time today. Inflation targeting, currently it is 3-6%. The governor always refers to the midpoint of 4.5%. Lots of talk now around moving that target to 3%. Why is this an opportune time to do that shift to what is essentially a fairly big move down to a 3% target?
Oh, that's a really great question, Simon. So if we take a look at what inflation is looking like at the moment, and that really goes to show that even though we're in a cutting cycle already and we're able to cut interest rates, inflation is still floating down a little bit. And that's even put together with the global uncertainties. We can really see that this inflation number comes from the hard groundwork that's been done in the economy over the last couple of years since COVID is really starting to bear fruit. So infrastructure has really improved, the prospect of our supply chains, supply chain networks and bottlenecks being freed up. We're really starting to feel the effects of that, and therefore like inflation is able to float or drift, has been drifting downwards so nicely while we're able to be in a cutting cycle. So that really gives the South African Reserve Bank a great opportunity to reduce the inflation target to 3% without having to increase interest rates.
And what would that then be on our bond yields? Would that be positive for bond yields if they're, because part of an inflation target is around setting inflation expectations.
Yeah. So just before I move on to the bond yields, I just want to explain that, you know, the first time that South Africa actually moved the inflation target down, they managed to do that without increasing interest rates once.
Yeah.
They did it purely by quantitative easing, and it took maybe 1 or 2 years, and then the new inflation target. So previously it was at maybe at 6%. That means that 5.99% inflation target was still underneath the band. Now they're targeted at 4.5%, anchored expectations purely by communicating well and also having a great credibility score, one of the best in the world. So that shows that the impact that an inflation target being lowered without actually having to change interest rates or increase interest rates means that your bond yield impact won't necessarily be impacted. Maybe to drill down on that a little bit more as well, especially based on the credibility side of things, the inflation target that we're aiming now or speculated to be aiming of 3% makes us as South Africa, as a country, more competitive with our trading partner peers.
Yeah.
So it will increase the rand, so it will actually appreciate the rand. by quite a substantial, quite a valuable amount, which means we're not importing inflation anymore. This can also lead to foreign investments coming into the country a lot. Like, the trade just eases up a lot. If both, like, financial trade, if I can call it that, so foreign investments into bonds, South African companies, making South Africa a lot more attractive globally. So essentially, like, you know, if we manage to pull it off without having to change interest rates too much, the bond yield will remain slightly unchanged, but the risk premium in South Africa is also reducing, which will make bonds even more attractive for foreign investors.
And that, I imagine, I mean, GDP, one could say, you know, tied to inflation target could suppress growth, but I would imagine it's the similar sort of thing where, yes, it could, but truthfully, it makes us a more attractive and low inflation investment destination and economy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Also, just on the GDP, South Africa is in this unique position where we have a very low sacrifice ratio. What that means is that the GDP that we have to perhaps give up to address a lower inflation target, that ratio is very low. So we're able to still continue growing without having an inflationary pressure. So that means that consumers are spending responsibly, they're saving responsibly, they're not overspending or over demanding, and then supply chains are also able to keep up with the spending and the consumption that's occurring in the economy. So that means that the economy's growth is stable, and it's not outweighing, or it's not growing faster than what inflation is, what inflation can keep up with. So that really puts South Africa in a unique position to actually bring the target down without facing any type of or a very big pain point in any other facet of the economy.
Gotcha. Last question. A process. This is not up to the SARB or the governor. Is this the minister? Is this parliament? How does the process work to change the target?
That's a great question. People often, it can be a bit confusing and opaque. So it's a decision that gets made by the finance governor or finance minister. Mm-hmm. Essentially what happens is that the South African Reserve Bank will propose that they want to decrease the inflation targets. And then this gets discussed between the Reserve Bank and the National Treasury over a very long period of time. They've been speaking about this for before they started announcing it. They've been speaking about it a lot. And the reason there has to be an interaction between the two, not because maybe a common misconception would be that the government is trying to control the Reserve Bank or any type. That's not the reason. The Reserve Bank is completely independent. The reason is it feasible for a government to continue to spend, like, you need your government spending for infrastructure, you need it for social grants. Is there sustainable growth that can still occur? So is this sacrifice ratio low enough so that South Africa as a country won't get hurt if we lower the inflation target? And that's why it gets so deeply and so rigorously researched and discussed, and they use a lot of data, and they often run their models for a very long time in parallel to the ones that are live to see, okay, how would the economy react if we were in a different regime? And then that's how they come up with a decision together.
Gotcha. Okay, so it's not just over a cup of tea. I take your point. There's a ton of data into it, because the last thing we want to do is A, make a mistake, or B, regret the decision. A lower inflation target is a lacquer idea, but we need to do it right. We'll leave that there. Anna de Nobrega, Prescient Investment Management's in quantitative analyst and economist. Appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today. The 3% inflation target on the surface seems like a great idea. Would it serve our country better? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting Sylvester Kobe. He's deputy head of fixed income at Stanlib. Sylvester, appreciate the time today. It's been a wild start to the year. Locally, our budget got delayed a couple of times. We've got tariffs. We've got global tensions all over the world happening. And I want to start with you with perhaps the hard question. What would you consider a fair value for our currency and our bonds at the moment? Certainly, we saw the rand out at almost 20 earlier in the year, back around 18. Is there a fair value? Where would you peg it?
Thanks, Simon. It has been a wild ride indeed. So in terms of fair value, we actually now hold a negative view on both the rand and South African bonds. We expect them to weaken over the next few months, largely driven by the worsening fundamentals, both locally and offshore. We have the view that the strength we've seen currently is driven by the weaker dollar environment and lower oil prices, which have spurred on risk sentiments across emerging markets, and South African bonds and the rand have benefited. And looking ahead, specifically for the rand, we think that the worsening geopolitical picture with escalating conflicts across the world will work against it. Mm-hmm. But also we think the market, as the market starts cutting down on expectation of interest rate cuts by the U.S. Federal Reserve, coupled with the passing of, you know, the what's called the Big Beautiful Bill in the U.S. Congress, this will lead to a stronger dollar environment as the year unfolds, pushing the rand to around 18.5 by year end.
Okay, so weaker, but not massively weaker.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at that, I mean, how do you sort of, you and your team consider tactical asset allocation? I mean, because you've obviously got a flexible mandate and that must certainly help. How do you kind of then piece together your allocation in that regard?
Yeah, so we then, when we consider tactical allocation, asset allocation, we look at fair values. The first, with nominal bonds or bonds, South African bonds, as commonly known, you know, we think going into the medium-term budget policy statement, National Treasury will be updating their fiscal metrics, which will be worse than what they had budgeted in, you know, the third iteration of the budget. They expect around 1.4% growth. We think it comes below 1%, which will lead to wider budget deficits, pushing bond yields higher. So for the 10-year bond, we think fair value is around 10.5%. Mm-hmm. And seeing as it's currently around 10%, the total returns will be just, will be around 8% compared to money markets that's giving you 8.7%. Credit, as proxied by income funds, we think it will return around 9.5%, and inflation-linked bonds around 10%. So as we can expect, we've been shifting away from nominal bonds, cutting the exposure from around 60% in the flexible income fund to about 20% now. And then we've, you know, bought more liquid, highly rated credits, increased that exposure to about 30% of the portfolio, and bought some dollars because we expect the rent to weaken from now.
And I get your point. I mean, I mentioned the flexible mandate, and it is, I mean, it is, I imagine, quite an asset, and pun intended, I suppose, for you and your team to have that slightly more flexible mandate.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it allows us, you know, when things go pear-shaped, like they did around April with Liberation Day and so forth, we can actually cut the risk materially to protect clients' capital. And then when, you know, things start coming down and we hold a more positive view, we can, you know, dial up the risk and go into more riskier assets to get that, you know, better capital returns. So it gives that flexibility. And for managers that really utilize it, they can give clients good return outcomes over many years.
And you're utilizing it to that degree. I mean, as you say, Liberation Day. I mean, markets were under pressure already when that happened. I mean, the U.S. 10-year went over 4.5% at that point in time. You are responding practically in real time.
You have to. I mean, since COVID, this market has been close to impossible, very volatile. So you really need to be nimble, dynamic in your approach. And, you know, whenever new, credible, material information comes through, you need to shift around the allocations. And you know, you mentioned our flexible income fund. You can see consistent outperformance, 1-year return of about, or alpha of about 5%, and then 3% over the 3 and 5 years. And that's as a result of that dynamic approach to asset allocation.
Yeah, and that absolute flexibility. A quick last question. A lot of folks, when they look at this, I think, oh, but it's bonds, it's government bonds. I'm worried about the government. We certainly have seen some EM defaults in the past. I mean, the likelihood of a default on by the South African government on their debt, it's tough out there. The budget was tough, as you say. It's probably going to get tougher in October and budgets going forward. My sense is the likelihood of a default by our government is, I mean, I want to say zero, but maybe you never say zero, but it is immensely low.
It is very close to zero.
Yeah.
You know, countries that have defaulted or even, you know, reprofiled their debt, largely borrowing US dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you can imagine, when local fundamentals worsen, their currencies become weaker,
mm-hmm.
it becomes impossible to get the dollars to pay down their debt. So then they default. Whereas
yeah.
with South Africa's case, about over 90% of our debt is in rands.
Yeah.
So the worst, I mean, if we really can't afford to pay back, can print the rent, which will be hyperinflationary, but we won't default. We'll always just print money too, if it gets to that, to pay down
yeah.
our debt.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an inflation risk, perhaps more than than anything else. We'll leave it there. That's Sylvester Kobe. He's the Deputy Head Fixed Income, Stanlib. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Tasmin Somadin yesterday from Old Mutual Private Wealth, talking around local retailers and their efforts to boost beauty revenue. Most of you, if you thought beauty was a good revenue for expansion, a little over 40% said no, crowded space. Third said it depends on the brands. The rest were saying yes, a great opportunity. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, geopolitics and ESG.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.